Hello, welcome to the Basketball Soapbox. I'm your host, Daniel Daly. Thank you for joining me on this one. Thank you for all the support. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Thank you for joining me on episode 56, where I'll be taking a look at the latest in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia 76ers and their situations that's going on with James Harden, in particular, Joel Embiid kind of opening the door to a departure from Philadelphia with recent comments. But I want to start off with James Harden here. Looking at his trade request a couple weeks ago, about two, 3 weeks ago right now, and just the bizarre, well, from my standpoint, that's bizarre and just troubling, but not surprising behavior from James Harden, right? Like, first of all, let's start with him opting in. Basically, he opted in a couple weeks ago, basically stating he wants to get traded and wants to get traded to Philadelphia, in particular, basically looking at the landscape. And basically there's a number there on his contract that Philadelphia, whatever they were offering him in an extension that he didn't like or didn't think the dollars were will suffice. Looking back at what he did last year, obviously extending in on a short-term deal, taking less money, roughly $15 million less than what he could have gotten. Taking that deal, it helped the team have flexibility to bring in PJ Tucker and Daniel House, usually from the formerly from the Houston Rockets, his running mates when he was there, especially with Daryl Morey, who is the GM now, who is the GM of the Philadelphia 76ers. So looking at that standpoint of that and seeing what James Harden did on that end, That's admirable, right? Like you taking a pay cut for the team to improve and get better. But let's not get fooled here by what James Harden was doing with that short-term extension, especially with the player option, was to basically get a bigger deal on the back end of the deal, which is fine because athletes do that all the time. And he was like, no one talks about the pay cuts that I had and stuff like that of that nature, which is interesting because it's like, when you usually see players do that, like Tom Brady, a Tim Duncan comes to mind, guys of that nature, they don't usually brag about how they did that for the team. Obviously, you're doing that to put yourselves in a better position to win. So to look at James Harden from that standpoint and do that, it's like, okay, whatever. But that's just the nature of the business. You know what you were doing. Everybody knows what know what you were doing. The opt-out there was there to basically re-up, get more money, get in a longer extension that you were thinking about. And to not get it, I can understand it from Philadelphia's standpoint. When we look into his playoff history and what he's done, let's look at his first four games against the Celtics. He was masterful in game one and game four. I believe he had 46 in game one. In game four, he had 42 points. And over the first four games of that series, he had 28.8 points per game, 7.5 assists, 6.3 rebounds on 46% shooting from the field and 41% from three-point range. And that's what you want to see out of Harden, right? You want to see those type of numbers where he's putting up that many points. That means he's dancing on the perimeter, knocking down his shots, and basically orchestrating the game, especially from the offensive side of the ball, and being productive and being creative. That's the positive version of James Harden that we see at many times, of course, during the regular season, over the course of the season in Brooklyn, over the course of the season in his time in Houston, especially where he was an MVP. Getting that type of production is what you usually expect when you bring James Harden in, what they Philadelphia was expecting when they brought James Harden in. And he did that over the first four games with the Celtics. And then, of course, that game one was without Joel Embiid. Of course, he had a knee sprain, but I'll get into that later. But over the last three games was the James Harden that we usually hear about in Houston, wearing down over the course of the series and of a high intense series, and just going into a dumpster fire of production, not being as effective or aggressive. Over the last three games, he's averaged 13 points, 8.7 assists a game, 7 rebounds. But here's the kicker: on 31% shooting and 15% from 3-point range. And that's not what Philadelphia was expecting when they brought James Harden in. They were expecting him to be a little bit more consistent, especially being there with Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, and basically being the number two punch that Ben Simmons wasn't, that they passed on Jimmy Butler for. And they were expecting to get all that out of James Harden. So now we look at this situation here where we're seeing again in the playoffs, once again, James Harden breaking down over the course of a series, not being as effective, not being as an efficient player. And it's the same old Harden story, right, that we see time and time again over the course of the years here. And looking at it, it's just like, if I'm Philadelphia, do I want to commit all that money to James Harden, who broke down again in the playoffs? And that's the story here. And I think people looked at the Ben Simmons trade, of course, as a win, because you weren't getting any type of production there with a Ben Simmons at that point in time. None, zero, zilch, nothing. So to go from that to James Harden, obviously that's a win in the trade, even in that if it was a short time frame or whatever the case it may be. You were getting somebody who was a former MVP, multiple-time All-Star, All-NBA player, for a player who wasn't giving you anything. That's a win in that retrospective. But over the last three games of the series, he turns into Ben Simmons, ironically. Not being aggressive, not shooting a good percentage from the field, being lackluster, and that's what they ultimately got. And Philadelphia is stuck in the same position that it has been for the past, what, 2 to 3 years now. And they just haven't been able to get over that hump there in Philadelphia. Even with the three going up 3-2 against the Boston Celtics, they blow game six in Philly. And then in game seven, they get blown out. And James Harden didn't help the situation. And it wasn't all on him. I'm not going to say it's all on him. But when you look at his counterpart, Tyrese Maxey, over the last three games, close to 25 points per game and at 45% shooting. So to see James Harden just fall off a cliff again in the playoffs is just becoming the same old story for James Harden. And for him to turn around and sit there and say, hey, I want to trade out of Philadelphia. Now, maybe Philadelphia reneged on their part. I completely understand that point. It's a business. I'll get into that point as well. Like, Daryl Morey met you at the airport when you got off the private jet and you guys embraced and hugged. That's how badly he wanted to save you from your situation in Houston, which James Harden, even though he didn't handle the best, he did show up to work. It's troubling that James Harden just, again, when a situation doesn't fit his standard, that he wants out. And he's done this every time. Like, we've seen it in Houston. We've seen it in Brooklyn. And now we're seeing it in Philadelphia. And it's like, what, like, when is that going to end? And now let's not act like we don't think James Harden is going to be able to find suitors or anything like that. Right now they're saying the trade market is none right now because Philadelphia is not willing to engage and they're willing to wait until they get the best deal for them. Of course, Daryl Morey did that with Ben Simmons and it worked out. He had more years on his contract, which kind of helped the situation a little bit. James Harden here doesn't. So now you're trying to figure out here how to maneuver, how to get out of this. And James Harden did say that he said he wants to get uncomfortable, right? Like, he's been comfortable for too long. Now it's time to get uncomfortable. And it's like, what are you talking about? Uncomfortable should have been the low shooting percentage in the playoffs, the poor performances in the playoffs. Like, that should be uncomfortable playing like that, looking at James Harden. So now we're looking at the history of your play. We're looking at you getting older. I believe he's 33, going on 34. Let me check that real quick. Give me 1 second. Yeah, James Harden is 33 years old, going on 34, and he wants a max contract extension. Like, I don't, with your declining play in the playoffs every year, with your injury history building up over the course of the years, I don't see you getting that big-time contract. Now, I'm not saying that a team wouldn't pay you that because James Harden is better than most players in the NBA. Most players are going to they're going to take a chance on him, just like we saw with Kyrie Irving. He just signed for $126 million, $120 guaranteed with only $6 million in incentives. Like, players are still going to get paid. That's just the NBA, especially when you're able to put the ball in the basket like a Kyrie Irving and James Harden are. But just the decline over the past couple of years, and then, of course, last year we look at the 2022 playoffs, you average 18 points per game, 8.6 assists, 5.7 rebounds, shooting 40%. And then in the 2023 playoffs, you get a little better, 20.3 points per game, 8.3 assists, 6.2 rebounds, but you're shooting 39% from the field. So we're not seeing that productivity that we see in the playoff, in the regular season from James Harden, which he was an all-NBA caliber player on the verge of being an all-star. All these things that we've seen from James Harden during the regular season. And it's kind of like, to me, like, no insult, of course, he's a Hall of Famer who I'm going to mention. It's kind of like a Peyton Manning or kind of like I want to say Karl Malone type of career where you're putting up all these numbers in the regular season and then you get into the playoffs and you kind of stumble there. And is not as efficient, not as effective, and not really helping your team win in the long run. And to not have Philly even get to an Eastern Conference Finals since 2001, you were brought in to do that, and you're having the same effect as a Ben Simmons. So when you look at what Philadelphia did with Ben Simmons, that whole fiasco, you look at what happened with letting Jimmy Butler go, who got along with Joel Embiid and everything was looked like. And you see what Jimmy Butler's doing with the Miami Heat. Those are big losses for Philadelphia. Those are big losses for the Sixers. Those are big losses for the Sixers fans, where you've had Jimmy Butler in the past, who now you see what he's doing in Miami. You bring in James Harden, who stumbled in Houston, got to a couple Western Conference Finals, goes to Brooklyn, gets injured, gets hurt 1 year, and then instantly wants out. Comes to your team, gets to the second round. Of course, there's some injuries to Joel Embiid. The team is fading around him. You're facing a tough Miami Heat team. Understandable. But this year, even when you guys had Joel Embiid miss one game in the Eastern Conference semifinals, you get up 3-2. And you blow a 3-2 lead. Like, I don't know at that point what James Harden is expecting. I don't know where this is going to go. But just looking at the optics of it, looking at the way of his play, I don't really see how James Harden has leverage here, especially with him opting in. I think that was the big mistake that James Harden made, because it was similar to Dwight Howard in 2012 when I said I believe he said he wanted to go to the Nets, and he could have went there. They could have did a sign and trade or whatever the case may be, but he opted in, and now that he had to stay with the Orlando Magic, and he said he changed his mind and wanted to stay in Orlando and all that stuff, and then he ended up going to the Lakers. But when you look at what James Harden did, who's a little bit more in his career, a little bit more savvy, you think would be a little bit smarter in these situations. He gave up all leverage by opting in. And he instantly thought, oh, I'm just going to get traded to the Clippers. And maybe that will happen eventually. But when you opted in, you gave up all your leverage. They don't have to trade you. They can figure out what to do. Teams can hold off. Wait it out. You're going to be older. You're not going to get the big time extension that you wanted. But him opting in, you gave up all your leverage. And that's the thing where I'm like, why not just try to orchestrate with a team as a free agent? And then if you couldn't get the contract you wanted, you go back to Philly and say, hey, this deal's on the table for me. You guys can get something, or I can walk and take a smaller deal and then extend. That probably would have been the better situation for him, and he didn't do that. And maybe that was a trust factor with Daryl Morey, where he's like, hey, these guys are going to trade me. Or now it's in that mode where, hey, I'm going to be as disruptive as I can be, just like I was in Houston, and end up getting out. And it's just puzzling for Philadelphia, because they're always so close. And right now they're close. And it's just troubling that they can't seem to get out of their own way. They put all their pennies in their basket, especially going after James Harden, giving up picks. And now you're in that same situation where you're going to either have to potentially trade him, bring him back, try to work that out and bring him back. And it's interesting to see how that's going to go. Most definitely interesting to see how that's going to go. But I just think it's crazy that he opted in. I think that was the big mistake that he made in opting in. And it's like, you didn't need to do that. And I feel like that kind of fucked up his angle of trying to leave Philadelphia a lot more easier than expected. Can this be repaired potentially? You know, him and Daryl Morey have a relationship there. Maybe it's burned, maybe it's not. We'll see what happens there. But let me get into the big thing. Joel Embiid's recent comments, potentially a Joel Embiid departure from Philadelphia, that he opened the door there. And let's get to the quote here. I'll bring it up on the screen. Joel Embiid at the Uninterrupted Sports Film Festival with Maverick Carter, interview there. He basically said, I just want to win a championship, whatever it takes. I don't know where that's going to be, whether it's in Philly or anywhere else. I just want to win and have a chance to accomplish that. I want to see what it feels like to win that first one, and then you can think about the next one. It's not easy, but it takes more than one or two, three guys. You got to have good people around you. And myself, every single day, I work hard to be at that level so I can make it happen. So every single day, I'm working towards that. Now, to me, there's nothing ultimately wrong with that quote, right? Like, that's something that everybody wants to accomplish, win a championship. But that little part there where he talks about, or maybe somewhere else, I think people are sitting there, and I've had a couple conversations with some people saying, oh, he's weak, he's taking the easy way out, he's trying to be in a situation where all these guys just ask to be out, be traded. And that might be true with a couple of people, like a Kyrie Irving, like a James Harden, like a Kevin Durant in situations where these guys want to get traded as soon as something goes wrong or it's not working out. Cool. But all those situations are not like that, and I don't think that's a situation like this. Now, if we look at Joel Embiid in the playoffs, the first three games against the Celtics, he was 26 points, nearly 10 rebounds and three blocks on 44% shooting, way down from his MVP numbers where he was 33% and a higher field goal percentage, 33 points per game and 10 rebounds. And then the last three games of the series, he kind of dipped off a little bit there, 24.7 points, 8.3 rebounds, still getting three blocks, but shooting 40%. And we've seen this over the past couple of years where Joel Embiid has dipped a little bit in the playoffs and not as effective as he was in the regular season. And, of course, after MVP season that he had and really trying to chase that, to see that drop in production, maybe it's just the Celtics, maybe it's playing with James Harden and his not being as productive as he was. But Joel Embiid takes some of that blame too, right? Like, his production went down a little bit. He wasn't as effective on the offensive end. All the things that we've talked about in the past years with Joel Embiid and, of course, injury history like that. And when we talk about his injury history, in 2022, he had surgery on a thumb and an index finger. He got a concussion and an orbital fracture in his face. That was against Toronto, where he missed, I believe, the first two games of the Miami Heat series last year. And that's crazy. Like, that's just something that you can't fight. If you get a concussion or a broken face in that case, it's very difficult to come back and then be all right and be 100% in that. And then in 2023, this year, he had a knee sprain at the end of the Brooklyn series, where he missed the last game of the Brooklyn series and he missed the first game of the Celtics series. But was able to come back and try to be productive. And looking at those situations there, it's just like, for Joel Embiid, I understand it on a point of putting the franchise on notice. People might say, oh, he's the franchise player. He hasn't been healthy. He's been injured. Not as productive in the playoffs, which are similar. So some of that's true. I'm going to agree with that. I'm not going to put that all on injuries and stuff like that, because he has played well. He has played poorly in the playoffs at times. And you look at that and it's like, okay, I can see that. And they're 27. I believe they're 27 and 26 in the playoffs with Joel Embiid. So they're just above 500. That's not cutting it. And especially a guy who won MVP, you want to be better than that. Especially a guy who you signed an extension, you want to at least get to the third round of the playoffs and then be like, okay, we can figure out something from that standpoint. So looking at it from that standpoint, completely understand it on Philly side, where they're like, okay, why would you even try to do that when we've been trying to tinker around you and try to build around you. And let's be honest, they have tried to do that, but there have been some bad moves in terms of the whole Ben Simmons situation. Now, could that have been handled better? Maybe they could have reconciled that and brought Ben Simmons back, or whatever the case may be. But at that point, it was broken. Ben Simmons wanted out. Joel Embiid had to deal with that and had to deal with the franchise babying Ben Simmons, not forcing him to be better, all these other things, and not working on his shot, not getting outside his comfort zone. All these things of that nature with the Ben Simmons deal, which was a lot more extensive, as I believe in the 2021 playoffs, where Ben Simmons was a clusterfuck in those fourth quarters against Atlanta and really hindered the process of Philly again. And that whole Ben Simmons situation where Joel Embiid had to deal with that, that sucks. They end up trading for James Harden, who's a Daryl Morey guy, GM from Houston days and all the stuff. They have a friendship, whatever the case may be. And it works good during the regular season. But in the playoffs, you have the same type of problems that you've had with Ben Simmons, where you just can't advance. And is that fair for Joel Embiid now to deal with this again in the uncertainty of the roster, and especially a weaker roster now? They lost Shake Milton and George Niang. And if you lose James Harden, you're back at square one. If you're not trying to get Damian Lillard, you're not trying to get a top guard in the league to play with, then you're back at square one with Philadelphia. And that's something that I don't think Joel Embiid wants to do, right? So for him to be like, yo, you guys got to figure this out. I had to deal with the Ben Simmons situation, and now I'm dealing with the James Harden situation where both these guys won out, and it really doesn't indirectly have anything to do with me. Now, with Ben Simmons, of course, it was play style and stuff like that, and Doc Rivers kind of throwing Ben underneath the bus, what people would say. I thought he was just being honest, because after a performance like that, I don't know what else you're supposed to say. But looking at Joel Embiid's part of it, it's just like, yo, we keep taking steps backwards, right? Like, we lost Jimmy Butler, who I was cool with, who I thought could have been on the next level, got guys going around him, which we just saw in Miami. Now, you're looking at that Miami situation, and it's like, yo, that could be us. We should be making finals appearances. We shouldn't be making Eastern Conference finals appearances. We should be better than what we are. And Philadelphia continues to, like, take steps backwards. Although they were, again, it looked like a win when they traded Ben Simmons for James Harden, of course, because you weren't getting any production. But now you're looking at it, and it's like, yo, why are we taking steps backwards? Like, and if we're going to trade James Harden, can we at least get in the Dame Lillard conversation? It doesn't even seem like they're in that conversation. Like, that's not even on the table or possibility or anything happening. And it's like, you start looking around, and it's like, yo, we're not getting it done. And it's nearly a decade in Philadelphia. Nearly a decade. And it's like, yo, we're not getting any closer to our goal. And I could understand where Joel Embiid is putting the franchise on notice, saying, hey, you guys got to figure this out in terms of building this roster and making it competitive, especially after he just won MVP. He's going to be in his prime years. And, of course, he had little knick-knack injuries, but has been overall healthy, more healthier than in the years past. You got to maximize this window, this opportunity, before these other teams in the East start creeping up. The Celtics are trying to retool. The Bucks are going to try to figure it out. Miami's going to get better at some point. Indiana's adding pieces. All these other teams are starting to add up, have cap space. And that's where it leads to the Knicks situation. The Knicks, where he had Leon Rose as his agent beforehand, before he went to the New York Knicks as president and stuff like that and running their operations there. He has a connection there in New York. New York has contracts to trade. New York has young pieces. New York has draft picks. They're in a prime position to trade for somebody. And I think that's more of an opportunity for Joel Embiid and say, hey, let me go play in this other big market here, where I think a team could actually build and at least show some at least consistency in terms of trying to turn it around recently. Like, we can say that. Like, we can look at New York and say, hey, they got Jalen Brunson, they got RJ Barrett, they got Tibbs, they actually trying to move something, actually trying to get better. Made some noise in the playoffs a little bit. Maybe that's a better situation, a better, bigger market. Maybe we can get some free agents to go there. rather than dealing with this shit in Philadelphia. That's a real option for him. I think Miami can also be an option for him. I think the Western Conference teams can be an option for him. But right now, I understand Joel Embiid from that standpoint of wanting to put the franchise on notice. And guys have done this in the past. Like, I also got into another conversation with some people where people are complaining about this era. And I'm like, yo, like, Hakeem Olajuwon asked for a trade. Magic Johnson asked for a trade. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar asked for a trade. Shaq has forced the franchise to do certain things in Orlando. Draft players, trade players, et cetera, in L.A. All these other things. Kobe Bryant asked for a trade. Like, this stuff happens. Like, this is normal power moves that franchise players should do. Like, yo, we're going to do this. Or I'm going to have to explore my options. And that's something that Joel Embiid has to think about, especially if he wants to be in those caliber of all-time big men. Of course, if he wants to win a championship, he kind of has to put his franchise on notice. This is what this new era of player is going to do. Apply pressure to the ownership, apply pressure to the GM, apply pressure to the franchise. Like, yo, we got to be better than this. Now, I got to do my part, of course. I got to show up. I got to be healthy. I got to be in shape. I got to be willing to put in the work. And I want to win. But on the flip side, you guys just can't sell tickets. You guys just can't continue to just fuck around and just not do anything. And I think that's the area where this player is going to speak up more and be in those more direct moves, and have more of a say than they did in the past. And that's what we're continuing to see here. And especially with Joel Embiid doing this, hopefully Philadelphia wakes up for their sake and continue to build around him where he can at least get to the Eastern Conference Finals and get a chance to get into the finals. And they haven't been able to do that. They have been stuck in the second round, been stuck in the treadmill, various injuries, declining players in the playoffs with their production, all types of things. But at some point, that's going to meet the end of the road, right? Like, they either get it done or they don't. And I respect Joel Embiid for doing that and saying, hey, like, it, with his comments at least, saying, hey, we got to get it done here. And, of course, he said he was trolling or whatever the case may be or whatever. He's going to keep saying that. But, no, I think he was really being serious about this and being very particular with his words, what he was saying in those situations, because it's like, again, Philadelphia needs to start winning. I think a lot of guys are going to start doing that. Like, we always hear about Luka Doncic in Dallas. If they're going to be able to build a roster around him and put it together, or he's going to want out. I think Jason Tatum can also be in that same situation as one of those young players that say, hey, we got to get this done. And of course, that's on him too. It's on the star players as well. But I think a lot of guys are going to start looking at the franchises and start going, hey, what are we doing here? We can't continue to move backwards. We can't continue to be stuck in quicksand. We got to figure out a way to get over that hump. And it takes a part of the player and it takes a part of the organization to do that. And I think we're in that era where a lot of players are sitting there going, I don't want to deal with the Ben Simmons situation. I don't want to deal with the James Harden situation where we have a player that wants out every 6 months. Like, there's going to be players that are speaking up and against that at some point, whether privately or publicly, it's going to start happening. And that's the latest on Philadelphia. I feel like James Harden eventually will be traded at some point. I just don't see it making sense to continue that song and dance, especially if you're not going to extend him. Zach Lowe did say something about the CBA that where he can't do that situation where he did in Houston, where he was sitting out. And I think if he sits out 30 days, then Philadelphia can block any type of free agency transaction he wants to go do, especially because he's in an expiring deal in the last year of his contract. He doesn't have the right to go seek another deal. The only deal that he could seek will be with Philadelphia and then potentially be traded and moved. But he can't go somewhere else and then make another deal. So looking at it from that standpoint, James Harden is going to be there or he's going to be traded. In terms of Joel Embiid putting the franchise on notice, they're on the clock. They're on the clock. That's what those quotes were. That's what that meant. And we're going to see if what that brings in details in the next coming months, because they have to figure out the James Harden situation. And then they're going to have to try to build around Joel Embiid to continue their quest to get to the finals, his quest to get to the finals. So we'll see how that breaks down over the next couple of weeks. But up next on the Basketball Soapbox, I'm going to be talking about offseason grades for the NBA teams off seasons. I'm thinking about doing that, except for instead of trying to do a team base, one video per team, I think I'm just going to do the division, go over a couple teams in that situation and talk about their offseason moves. And I think I'm going to start with the Atlantic division, because of course that's my team, the Boston Celtics, the New York Knicks, Toronto Raptors, Brooklyn Nets, New York Knicks. I'm going to go over their off seasons and try to break that down and give a grade of what I think their moves are, what I think of their moves over the past couple months in the off season here, their draft picks, their signings, their trades in the case of the Boston Celtics. But yeah, I'm going to go over the off season grades for NBA teams around the league and start with the divisions. I'm going to start with that and continue, of course, my Soapbox Summer video series, which I started with Bomani Jones Bulldoze series, which started on with the New York Knicks. You guys can check that out. Recently just uploaded some videos for Ring Takes, my wrestling podcast, where I just went to AEW Blood and Guts and had a great time with Lewis and talking about wrestling and stuff like that. Of course, we're going on the road to SummerSlam as well there. But first, I'm going to start with the offseason grades for the NBA teams around the league and see what they're doing around the league and get my thoughts about that. Summer League has ended. I'll give my thoughts on the Celtics at least, because that's mainly what I was watching and looking for, and seeing how Jordan Walsh was going to perform during Summer League, which I did like. So I'll talk about all that stuff there. If you like what you're hearing, and please go to the YouTube channel, Soapbox Network, like, comment, and subscribe as we continue down this road over the summer until the next season. But thank you for joining me on this one. Again, I'm going to be following up with the offseason grades in the NBA and much more, especially on the road to SummerSlam on Ring Takes. But thank you for joining me. Check out the YouTube page, like, comment, and subscribe. Thank you.